Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey there, Thunder Buddies and travelers down Thunder Road. It's us, Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder Rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming to you as part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. I'm your host, your stable Wi-Fi connection on Thunder Road, Dave Ryan, and I'm joined, as ever, by my faithful co-host, Stagger Lee Malone. Lee, how are you this fine week?
Sorry, you're breaking up there, Dave. What was that?
Don't do this to me.
I'm good, pal. I'm good. Yeah. Making jokes at your expense is always a highlight of my day.
There's a certain level to which I have reached the limit of my humor this week. And after the last, not even hour, like the last half hour has been the internet stuff. But just after, just a fucking bullshit week, as like, the last thing I need now is fucking buffering humor. Thank you very much, sir. Fucking Michael Buffer of the podcast over there.
Listen, I gotta bust your chops every now and again. Keep you on your toes.
Yeah. Chops busted, sir. Yeah, it's been a week. I'm older than I used to be. I have realized this in a number of ways during my week.
Did you have a birthday that wasn't a birthday?
No, my birthday is right in the middle of the year.
That's what I was thinking.
But no, it was the kind of, right before Christmas in my work, we bring all of our groups on individual Christmas trips. And this has made me aware of my age more than ever. Because one, after 3 days of it, well, four if you include an event I was at last Sunday, I am fucking exhausted. I've got nothing left in the tank. If we were doing anything more physically exerting than sitting down and talking about wrestling, I might start crying. So there's that. There's the fact that like those days were relatively stressful. I won't get into it in here, but you know, bringing large numbers of young people out at different things can bring with it its own stresses and incidents and things like that. But the other thing that has made me really realize my own age, Lee, is do you remember having a metabolism?
Yes.
Do you remember being able to eat junk food all the live long day and suffer no ill consequences? Mm-hmm. This is not the case in our 30s, my friend. Figured this out.
That shit has to stop.
So, because I have been away from home, these events have been happening, like, they start in the early afternoon and I'm away until, like, 11, 12 at night all week. Because of this, I have not been eating at home. And because of us bringing the groups, we kind of go wherever they vote to go. So it's not like we're going somewhere that's going to have nice roast dinners and vegetables and things like that. It's fast food, a lot of fast food. So this week, the last 4 days, my dinner have been alternating between McDonald's and Five Guys.
Oh, lovely.
And look, Five Guys in particular, a lovely treat, you know, as an occasional thing. If you were going to have two in a week, if it's pillar to post, if it's like on the Monday and then the Sunday later that week, you're probably fine. Even if there's like one day of good eating in between, I might survive without any ill will. But let me tell you, going McDonald's, Five Guys, McDonald's, Five Guys, the last few nights, I am feeling sluggish. I am feeling hungover. It's horrible.
Let me tell you, all you need is to throw in a big pretzel and a kebab and you have had a WXW weekend.
Oh, holy shit. Yeah, for nobody that's been at like the Carrot or Tag League weekenders, there's some amount of shit eating at that. Because like the most convenient things around you.
And that's just when the WWE rep shows up on the screen.
There's, I think the last time we went... Yeah, because it wasn't the time you were with me. It was the carrot right before the pandemic, right? That was the first time...
Right before. It was right at the outbreak.
It was right at the outbreak. That was the first time I have been with the group that goes to Germany all the time, and there wasn't a single visit to the McDonald's beside the Turban and Halle.
Which is shocking for me, to be honest.
Which is, like, usually there are two places. There's the 360, which is like a... burger bar, sports bar kind of thing. Which you get at, like, everybody always just gets pizza or burgers. But there is, if you wanted to, I don't know, look at a vegetable. That is a possibility there. It's obviously not in McDonald's. But yeah, this, I am completely wiped. I also realised my own age because I was at an event that my work organised at which there was, like, a special guest. And I was like, fair enough. Whatever. I didn't really pay attention to it because I had like 20 people to try and negotiate on a bus up and down. Hadn't really tried to find out who the special guest was. And then it was just some guy from TikTok, right? Some Irish TikTok guy. And he came into the room and I was like, Jesus. Like, I found out about 5 minutes before he was coming in who it was. And one, I'd never heard of him. And two, I was just like, Jesus, that's like a really lame guest to get. You know those clips of, like, the Beatles going to America in the 60s?
Oh, no, really?
That is, like, people were crying when they saw this guy.
Get the fuck.
People were having, like, you know, hyperventilating when they saw just this bloke who was, like, he does kind of funny TikToks. And he came out and he did, like, I won't name him because I don't want to fucking trash the dude. But, like, he came out and he did... like half stand up, half motivational speech for the guys. And it was shit. Like, it was terrible stand up. It was like, this guy, if it wasn't for whatever TikToks he had going viral, like, guy was not making it as a stand up, I'll put it that way. Yeah, so I feel as old as fucking dirt. But you know what? I've got some water, which again, like, you go back in time and you tell me, like, one day you're going to come home after having a slap up McDonald's and be like, I fucking need water.
Mm-hmm. All that salt.
And that's... my body is telling me now, look, don't get me wrong. I've got the old Coke Z here as well. Need a bit of flavour, you know. But I've got my big thing of water beside me just to get me through... a night of podcasts. Yeah, it's been arduous. It's such a first world thing to go, oh, I've been on so many adventurous trips that I haven't had to pay a penny for because they're going with work, that I feel a little ill. But at the same time, it's like, fucking struggle is real, man.
All I can say is wait till you have kids.
And then I obviously in the middle of, yeah, this is very true. But in the middle of all this, I had to sit down and watch an episode of Thunder that, I mean, I put more thought into my nutrition the last 72 hours than was put into this program start to finish. But more on that anon. How has your week been? I feel like I've monopolized things by just fucking writing a diary entry here.
I'd say I feel like I Brian Alvarez the start of the show where I went, Dave, tell us about your week. And just didn't come back for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
my week's great. Look, it's Christmas. It's busy. I've had one birthday already this month. I will have a second birthday this month. And then Christmas.
Neither of which yours.
No. I'm not that vain that I have two birthdays.
Yeah. I tell you what, you are a man of precision. to have two children born the same month. That is the kind of consistency people pay us the big bucks for. Just very much a Lee Malone mentality of, no, we're getting the fucking birthdays done in 1 month. Fuck it. I'm not going to Smith's twice to get two sets of toys.
Listen, if I could have picked any month other than December, I would have. It's just the way she happens.
It's the way the cookie crumbles, exactly. My friend.
Just busy work, life.
I'm excited for the festive season because we've got some, you know, after this show, we've got some fun podcasts to record for this month.
That's the other thing, Dave. We have, roughly 18 podcasts to do between now and Christmas Day.
Yeah. We'll get it done. Don't you worry.
Oh, we will.
But things get more fun after this because we've got, you know, we'll talk about it in the control center, but we've got like some different bits and pieces coming up this month that I'm looking forward to. That'll be something I really like about podcasting in December is that you're kind of, with both my podcast, this and Link to the Cast, plug, I do stuff that's out of the ordinary. That's not just the usual kind of weekly. Not that I don't enjoy doing Days of Thunder, but it's nice to freshen things up, watching something different every now and then.
Yeah, you work with professionals.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we get to do some of that stuff, and over on Link to the Cast, I'll be doing Game of the Year. So it's a good month.
Obviously by professional I mean Liam.
Yeah.
You work with Gareth 100%.
100%. Not that guy, you know, always, you know, muttering about white power under his breath. A little bit odd. Anyway, we're not watching a Harris Brothers mixtape, by the way, no matter how many times he insists.
Those DMs, it's just like, you know, I understand he has the playlist saved, but...
Yeah. I can't believe he's getting like a full replica sleeve of their tattoos.
I mean, who makes that for you?
But look, do you know what? It's his Christmas money. He can do what he wants with it. Do you know? I just think, you know, a public statement about squandering the you got to be kidding me Patreon money on right wing tattoos would have been, you know, it would have been honest. But
I mean, I don't think Liam will be too happy with Garrett.
You know, Garrett can do what he wants. You know, it's a free country. Not that he wants it to be a free country, but it is one currently.
Which country?
Whoa, look, you know, let's not get into that, shall we? Hello, my friends. Has that holiday rush got you neglecting meals? Well, look no further than Hello Fresh. This Christmas season with HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. It's the most festive time of year, and HelloFresh is here to make the most out of every moment. From holiday hosting to dinners during busy weeknights, you can count on HelloFresh to deliver fresh ingredients and seasonal recipes. Tis the season for saving money wherever we can. HelloFresh is cheaper than grocery shopping and 25% less expensive than takeout, so you can use those savings for holiday gifts or to treat yourself. HelloFresh is a treat in itself, am I right? To avail of the offer being made to Days of Thunder listeners, please go to HelloFresh.com/VOW18 and use the code VOW18 for 18 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/VOW18. Use code VOW18 at checkout. It's HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. This is Thunder Episode 62, a taped special from Penn State, airing on the 6th of May 2022, gaining what I would think, even for this time, is a fairly surprisingly low rating of a 2.8.
Oof.
We haven't dipped below the 3 in a little while, if memory serves. Now, I think within minutes of starting this show, it became apparent why that was. But I just wanted to reflect on, we're almost halfway through 1999, Lee.
Yeah.
It's a weird feeling. This feels like, I think we had said it all the way through covering 1998 on the show, that 1999 was going to be the year that felt like the worst slog.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the worst part of the worst slog, this part of the year, because we're about 3 months away from where the fun bad era starts.
The era.
You know, as he so often is, Double J will be the harbinger for fun bad. as will the later arrival of Vince Russo. But, you know, well, let's not put the cart before the horse here. How are you feeling having survived now nearly five full months of 1999 WCW?
Tired. it's not good. It hasn't been a good year. They've had high points, but yeah, man, the lows have been low. And what I think we've talked about this plenty of times on the show, what kills me the most is seeing the opportunities that are handed to them that they continually squander. And that's just frustrating as hell to relive.
Mm.
But I want to say this show tonight is simultaneously the absolute worst Thunder we've ever watched and the best.
Yeah. It was the best because you were liberally fast-forwarding it.
No, well. For the close of the show, I think it was incredible.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to get to that. I found the vast majority of this show to be one of the most... It's like, I suppose the current day example is like one of those rampages where they don't even try book anything interesting. And it's almost like you feel like WCW is directly telling you, you're an idiot for watching this.
Yeah, I mean,
nothing important is going to happen tonight. And that, I imagine, plays a heavy part in why we got to a 2.8. Because just from the amount of pre-records and previously ons we got on in the first half hour of this show, I wouldn't be fucked.
But Tanay opens the show by saying they're going to recap the second reign of DDP and Ric Flair's presidency thus far.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't tell you what's coming up on this show...
And we're entering, as we kind of talked about on the SmackDown pilot, we're entering the start of the only way to open a professional wrestling show is with video packages and lengthy in-ring promos. Mm-hmm. The idea of just starting with a hot match is
dead.
Going out the window. Mm-hmm. Like, it's still a thing on pay-per-view. Thank God. I feel like there are going to be months in 1999 where we're going to be lurching towards a pay-per-view, because at least even if it's a bad opener, at least WCW pay-per-views still have very little of the backstage, previously on, lengthy Gene Okerlund promo things.
They'll still have good workers put together that can't help but have a good match sometimes.
Yeah, and nothing like, you know, well, seldom do matches outstay their welcome. Mm. You know, there's a few of them we've talked about, particularly in the last few pay-per-views, but like by and large, matches kind of zip by on the pay-per-view. But anyway, you kind of alluded to it there. We basically recap the entirety of the double title switch Nitro.
Yes.
One part that I liked about that is we got the finishing stretch of that Sting DDP match again, which I still insist absolutely rocked.
Incredible.
That then leads to the segment, again, we already recapped, Nash challenging DDP, blah, blah, blah. We got, it's such a break with the style of WCW, this video package they then do for Nash and DDP.
The old promo pictures?
Yeah, where it's like, it goes from, you know, there are all these kind of real late 90s video graphics usually, and that kind of that kind of music, mm-hmm, in all of them, and it goes to this one where it looks like Nash and DDP are promoting their fall collection ahead of like Paris Fashion Week or something. It's just this much more kind of like, I liked it, like, because it was an interesting, more stylized video that had like a modicum of art direction behind it.
What was that gimmick on SmackDown for like 6 weeks? The male model thing?
Oh, maximum male models? Is that it? Yeah. Yeah. I still have not, apart from like tweets, I haven't digested 1 minute of that on the television at all. And,
you're,
you know,
you're
I'm,
not
I'm,
into
I'm better
the
off.
LA night?
No, I'm, oh, I am absolutely not. No. After that, we then get, and this I imagine, I haven't looked up the segment ratings on this in the old Observer or anything like that, but I imagine this is the moment where it starts to crater, because we get a third successive video package. Mm-hmm. And this is another lengthy one, and it's one we've seen about half of before, which is recapping Flair losing it and going into the asylum. And they've just kind of tacked on some of the stuff that happened after the last video package about Flair losing it. The only redeeming quality of that one is that still every time I hear the phrase Roderick Piper, I will pop for it. And I'm not ashamed.
And AAA.
Yes, yes. AAA. That is still good stuff. Then we go to our first match.
Actually, who do you think is more problematic? The AAA that was in the Insane Asylum with Rick, or the actual promotion AAA?
Oh, it's probably Asylum AAA.
He's definitely said some things, hasn't he?
He's definitely said some things, but I like, at least he didn't have a national TV presence after this. Not that I know of, anyway. He could be like a background extra in 100 things for all I know. But he hasn't had a long enough platform to milkshake duck himself. Next up, we have Perry Saturn and Raven versus Scotty Riggs and, do you hear that? Faintly on the breeze? It could only be an Enos Alert. And sadly, Lee, I have terrible news for the Thunder Buddies.
It's the last of the Enos.
This is the last of the Enos. This is the last Mike Enos Thunder appearance of all time. Now, he is still in WCW through late 99. I'm not sure if we'll ever encounter him again, because I was looking at the matches he has, and most of them after this are on Saturday night. And I don't think he appears in any like pay-per-view battle royals or anything like that, though I could be mistaken. So I think we're going to have to accept that this is the end of the Enos. He is getting the shaft.
I'm sad to see the Enos go.
The Enos is getting off as we speak. Yeah. I knew the Enos was coming, but I didn't know the end of the Enos would come this soon. And it's just a real mess that we have to clean up here.
He's exploded onto our screens for the last time.
He has. All over it.
At least he brought some new gear.
He brought some new gear, which seems like a waste of money in hindsight. But I'll tell you who wasn't respecting the Enos tonight. And that's Raven and Perry Saturn. Because these men, and I know it's Raven's gimmick, but these men could not have communicated "we're not arsed" any louder than if they got on the microphone and shouted "we're not arsed."
Well, first of all, did you notice how fucking horrendous the overdubbing was on Raven's entrance?
Yes.
To the fact you hear the first 20 seconds of his actual WCW song.
I feel like there was one person put on the job of redubbing all the WCW themes, which means he had to watch all this shit like we do. And he got to this point in 99 and his spirit is broken. And he's just like, fuck it, I'm just overdubbing the track. I don't care. I'm not listening back to it. It's going to have to do.
That's, you know what, it's quite possible.
Yeah.
The second thing that you just know these two do not give a fuck is, first of all, Perry Saturn is laughing.
Yeah.
And second, we have to talk about Raven's combat shorts.
Take us on a visual tour of Raven's getup here.
So Raven comes out and he has, you know, the leather jacket, or not the yeah, he does. It's a leather jacket, isn't it? Yeah. And the band t-shirt or whatever it is he wears. He has the plaid shirt wrapped around his waist. But then, it's not the denim cutoffs. He has the John Cena-esque camo shorts. And it's very off-putting.
He's pioneering the camo jorts.
It's kind of weird and unsettling.
Yeah, it is slightly off-putting.
Do you think Raven just showed up and did not want to work?
It's entirely possible, and I with the opponents and with the card on offer tonight, I can't exactly say as I blame him.
Like this, like you said, this was the second part of a double taping.
Yeah,
it's possible they were on the first half of the taping.
Yeah,
and they were scrambling to fill time, so they just asked Raven and Saturn to do a match.
Let me have a look, because it's a terrible reflection on us that we can't remember
2 weeks ago.
The Thunder 61.
Didn't we watch a Nitro in between though? Or was that before? Nope.
It was this was the night that we watched SmackDown at the same time.
I've erased all of that from my fucking memory.
Yeah, I suppose as well you should have. They actually didn't wrestle on that show. But so they were appear? Flown out to wrestle on that. They may have appeared, but they didn't wrestle. So they may have been flown out to wrestle on the second half. But still couldn't fucking care.
Well, I did like that Tanae brought up once again that Scotty Riggs was in the flock.
Well, I tweet about this. Is like Mike Tanae seems to be the only one that either knows or cares anything that happened more than 5 minutes ago in this company. Because there's no real reaction from the crowd. More about the crowd in a second. But there's no real reaction from the crowd when Riggs and Raven stand off and go at it with each other. And there's no kind of like acknowledgement from the way they're wrestling each other that they have history. Like it's where these two men had never met for the most part. But Mike Tanay is reminding you of that while I'm on the crowd, Lee. As Tom Zenk once said, a lot of people dressed as fucking chairs in that building tonight. Holy shit.
Okay, the hard camera side was empty.
Yeah.
And yet there seemed to be a lot of fans to the left of the hard cam.
Yeah. It's really, like, I know a lot of people do the piss break in between the first and second matches, but we've seen, the last match of the first half and the first match of the second half. However, have seen taped Thunders, seldom, I will admit, where they put on a match with either a recognisable talent that people like, or, even rarer, a good match, and people run back to those seats.
This was not either on this of those night, cases.
On this night, I think there might have been a rush for people to find their fucking cars, because, yes, some people did come back, and it kind of filled out a bit on the hard cam as the show went on, but... yeah, I'd say there was some people that just went the fuck home.
Couldn't blame them, honestly.
No, absolutely couldn't.
This match was a whole load of fucking nothing, wasn't it?
Which is kind of a running theme of the night, I would say. The only thing about it that it is of any interest for us to take out for continuity is the stuff around Perry Saturn's shoulder. Which seems to be playing into the tag team match that's happening at the weekend. Mm-hmm. So he's a heavily, makes DDP's ribs look 100% how heavily he's taped his shoulder here. It may as well have been taped in a massive arrow pointing at his shoulder. And after the match, or it plays into the finish of the match, should I say. There's a couple of good spots in here. The Enos tries to finish early. It does happen to some men. There is a cool, not quite total elimination. That's like a standing sidekick, low leg sweep combo that I thought was pretty cool. And those two absolutely should have done more. Enos hardens up and gets the heat for a moment, but Riggs comes in and their offense immediately flops. Commercial break and the Enos, he's back on top and he's working away. He's pounding vigorously away at his opponents. He's working stiff. Crowd is absolutely dead for pretty much the entirety of this match. Mm-hmm. Enos is flopping Raven about, trying to do the mock tag with Raven's hand. And that's normally a good heat-getting spot. In fact, we can talk about later where Dean Malenko essentially does the same thing and actually does get a reaction out of the same crowd. But no one cares. No one cares. And I think it... Do you think, Lee... Like, obviously, this is them in their third hour of WCW shit. But do you think part of it is just that there is not one person in this building that believed for a single second that Raven and a half-alive Saturn were going to be in any trouble here?
I think that's very much the reason why nobody actually was invested in this or any other match on the show, really.
Riggs gets a chair, accidentally smacks the Enos around with it a bit, and Raven then drop kicks the chair into Riggs' head. Raven gets the even flow, but Riggs breaks it up. Riggs gets distracted, and Saturn hits what is a fairly impressive one-armed Death Valley driver, and they win. Like you said, nothing match. But at least it furthers the kind of injury angle with Saturn if you're going to try and pluck one thing from it, you know. Next up, another video package. Roddy Piper video package, just because. And then we get a flashback to Roddy and Paige's confrontation from Nitro that we already covered. And then this leads to them re-showing the closing stretch of the Sting match. Yeah.
It's so bad.
Like, we are 6 segments into the show. 4 of them have been video packages. Mm-hmm. No, 5 of them. Only one of them hasn't. That was the match.
Yeah, there was only one segment.
There's a match and 5 video packages in the first 6 segments. Like, that's... You think about what that does to an audience. Especially because, like, Nitro was still absolutely, like... It was... head and shoulders in terms of ratings above Thunder, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't the kind of like demented Vince McMahon a few years later thinking he can create 2 completely separate audiences with Raw and SmackDown with different rosters. I was like, this was pretty much the same people watching Nitro and Thunder. Yeah. So I do get the whole, you know, every wrestling show is someone's first wrestling show. So you need to do a bit of context. You need to do a bit of recapping. And if you have like a really salient, really fucking fiery hot angle, you should replay the fuck out of it. Absolutely. But holy shit. Like, this is replays of things that by and large either weren't interesting or the vast majority of this audience already saw. The one exception I will say is that you should show the closing stretch of that DDP and Sting match. That's absolutely fine.
But here's the other thing. How much of this stuff is going to matter come the end of Slamboree? Because they're into another pay-per-view cycle then, and it's a brand new start.
Yep, absolutely. Every month is a complete, like, fucking throw the baby out with the bathwater now at this stage. We get a plug for WCW Saturday Night, and we're getting to that phase now, Lee, where I'm starting to think that WCW Saturday Night is the better show.
Well, yeah, because like because nobody pays attention to it.
Yeah, that's the B show. Do you know what Saturday Night reminds me of when I hear some of the talent on it? Do you remember when, during one of the periods, it was like the 2007-2008 period, when Russo was booking TNA, and everyone was saying, look, it's some of the worst wrestling TV that's ever been made, but their house shows are insane because they have this stacked roster of guys, and on the house shows... Russo's not there, so these guys just get to fucking wrestle, and it's awesome. And I feel like that's what WCW Saturday Night is, especially because Tanay was talking about how it's going back to a 2-hour format this week. So like you're getting 2 hours of guys that I cannot believe for a single second that Kevin Nash was paying attention as Booker to what was happening on Saturday Night. So I can't imagine it was ever as arduous a watch. Now, I'm sure it's absolutely rammed with video packages is the other thing. So we're not going to escape that problem. That's a production problem.
And probably dusty commentary.
Yeah, God. Actually, at the moment, it's Tanay and Scott Hudson.
Okay, that's not too bad.
So we're good for now. But anyway, on Saturday Night this week, you've Disco, you've Hack and Chastity, you've B-Team and Stevie Ray. Those aren't great, but then you're being told that you're getting Raven versus Malenko one-on-one.
Hell yeah.
Honestly, that by itself, orders of magnitude better than anything we got on this show.
Give me a 12-minute Raven-Malenko match.
Speaking of things that were not better than that idea, Eric Watts versus Rick Steiner. Now, I say it wasn't a good idea. We are starting to go into the period of Rick Steiner just roughing dudes up. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And there will always be, I was going to say 20%, probably closer to 40% of me that's going to find that extremely fun regardless of the context.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're kind of like, I'd like them to see them do something with Rick Steiner because he's still very popular. You know, he's still pretty, like, I even remember watching it in 2001 and going, hey, like, they're not really putting this guy in a prominent spot, but people really like him, you know?
People really liked Crash Holly. He didn't deserve to be put in a prominent spot.
Ooh, you might get a tweet. You might get a tweet or two on that one. People love Crash Holly, man.
Yeah. That's my point. He was very likable.
Now, my point is, whatever about whether you do something with Rick Steiner or not, I would prefer you absolutely didn't do anything with Eric Watts.
Yeah. Look.
Now, I will say, I'm thinking that Matt Hardy watched his Eric Watts tapes and got some wardrobe ideas for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yes, he does look like
Giant Matt.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. The older Hardy brother. He's like that Forgotten Jackson.
Do you know what, I don't think we've ever shared this on the air. Do you know what an off-putting presence Matt Hardy is in the year of our Lord 2022 and since his arrival in AEW? Is that you and I are in a group chat. Yes. It's you and I and Chris from the Cast and the Furious over on our Patreon and Jeff, formerly of the Strong Style Story podcast. And we tend to, you know, chat while Dynamite is going on. And since he showed up during the, it was the first year of the pandemic, wasn't it?
Yes, he showed up. Yeah, he showed up with the fucking Daddy's drone place. And all that, yeah.
Yeah, since Matt Hardy showed up, there has been an unspoken rule that whoever is in that chat, as soon as Matt Hardy appears on the screen on AEW programming, one of us is contractually bound to tweet in all caps, fuck off Matt, into the chat.
You say one of us, it's normally you and Chris.
To be fair, Jeff has helped out. Jeff has helped out, and it will be pointed out to me if he's on the screen and I'm talking and I haven't said it yet, that it's time to say it. And I'll tell you, the catharsis that comes with it is great. It makes him a lot more tolerable that I can vent my spleen at the start of a segment. I won't get into how actually some of the stuff he's been doing on the YouTube shows is, I would go to the point of mildly interesting, as far as like the low, low bar for Matt Hardy is now. But
I'll wait till Rebby shows up.
Yeah, I know. We're all waiting for that day. Do you know what was cute in this match, Lee?
What's your definition of cute when Rick Steiner is fucking embarrassing a man?
It was adorable that Eric Watts started off this match trying to razzle Rick Steiner. As if anybody in the universe was going to go, do you know what? Eric Watts could take Rick Steiner in a shoot fight.
Did you not listen to your 1992 and 1993 WCW tapes where Eric Watts is put over as a high school wrestling champion?
Great. He's not Rick Steiner, though, is he?
Well, no. Nobody's Rick Steiner.
No. Nobody's Rick Steiner.
And nobody's going to disagree with Rick Steiner.
I think that no one's going to be Rick Steiner. Especially because, like...
Do you know what? I want Braun...
For all the... If,
I was going to say, I want Braun Breaker to just go full Rick Steiner.
But the thing is, like, I've always thought since day one when I saw Braun Breaker, I was like, he looks way more like he's Scott's son than Rick's son.
He does, but I want him to go... forget Scott. Just go full Rick Steiner.
How are you going to say something like forget Scott Steiner? Like, that's a thing that's actually possible to do. One of the most singular human beings I've ever seen in my fucking life. Oh yeah, I'll just throw the fucking chainmail weirdo out of my head, will I?
I wish he was still barred from the Hall of Fame, just so we can keep seeing that picture.
Oh my God.
Don't let this man in.
Right. So, the razzling goes a bit as well as you expect. He takes a powder a couple of times, but on the third time, Rick just is like, I think he's trying to do the powder thing again, and Rick is obviously sick of him just going out of the ring. So he just holds on to him by the waist and throws him with, like, very close to a shoot belly to belly. And then gets the kind of like the rear mount and starts throwing in those, like,
just fucking disgusting cross faces.
Disgusting crossface strikes, like absolutely, like ringing his bell with every single one of them. Outside the ring, and Eric gets thrown into the steps. He tries to fight back, but a German suplex shows him who's boss. More roughing him up around. Like, again, it's just there aren't so much spots as him just like scrambling and clawing to try and get away from him.
It's that cartoon, you know, the cat trying to get away from the dog, fucking clawing at the ground.
Yeah. Were you trying? Did you forget Tom and Jerry?
No, I was being generic.
I thought you were like, you know, the cartoon with the cat. I was like, I've heard of it. Yeah, Tom and Jerry. He eventually hits the...
Actually, mentioned Tom and Jerry. Did you see that tweet about Mickey Mouse?
Oh, that he's going in the public domain? Yeah, no, I had seen that he was, but I haven't seen the tweet.
I can't read that one here.
Okay.
It's basically, you can do whatever you want with Mickey Mouse.
No, I have seen the tweet. Yes, I have, yeah. Yeah, it's like I can't wait to see like some of the like because you know you've seen the Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey thing, yeah. So like some of that shit is going to be happening with Mickey Mouse soon, and yeah, then probably some more of that fucked up stuff you're referring to.
Not the one that made the tweet.
No, look, Lee, we know you have the websites bookmarked in advance. That's all I'm saying. Could be worse. You could have the same websites bookmarked as Garrett
does.
That's
true. We'll
say no more about that. Rick eventually hits the bulldog, and then gets an Indian deathlock chinlock combo to put it to bed. And then Lee, I know you've been thinking, Jesus, it's been at least 5 minutes since a video package, but thank God there's one here again. We get to see Nash again laying out the four corner challenge on Nitro, and then they just play a bunch of this match, like a whole bunch of this match, which, as we recounted, wasn't very good.
I will say this is where I start skipping the show. I just couldn't watch. I couldn't give up the time to watch it again.
And would that be because straight after this we got another video package?
Yep. And after that now, video package, we got another video package.
Now, this middle video package is like they did a video package sandwich. Because this middle video package that was about Sting versus Goldberg was actually all right. I love the angle that for some reason has just appeared all of a sudden that they must have referred to on the Nitro we missed, and they're now replaying the soundbite from Tony. Who is the franchise? That's a cool angle to take for the first Sting versus Goldberg.
Not when the arrival of the other franchise is looming.
Well, this is actually like, this is my... It's like he just shows up in the middle. Could you imagine? The crowd would be ripping their seats up and throwing them at the ring.
And not in a good heat kind of way.
If I like, you get the feeling with some of these crowds that they are like one more WCW bait and switch away from a full on mutiny. And I think like having Triple H versus Goldberg interrupted by Shane Douglas probably would do the
job.
Did you
say Triple H?
Shane Douglas.
You said Triple H versus Goldberg interrupted by Shane. Yeah.
Did I? I don't know where that came from in my head. Sting versus Shane Douglas. Or Sting versus Goldberg. And then Shane Douglas comes in. Maybe I have in the back of my head Triple H's tendency to annoy things.
To beat Goldberg. Things,
his tendency to beat Goldberg. Jesus, he loved it.
Oh, I can't wait for the franchise to show up.
Yeah, our third video package then is the Gorgeous George versus Lil Nate feud.
Oh my
which,
god, that line
Jesus
from
Christ.
Lil Nate.
Oh my god, that he thinks is like the funniest line because he did it like two or three times.
No, I think they just repeated it two or three times.
No, he said it, I think he says it to Flair on the phone when he's still in the asylum, because I've heard him say the line before and not in the in-ring segment where he says it to her face. I'm not even going to repeat the line, but it's basically the whole thing is like he's calling her a stupid bimbo. And then we get, I know, Lee, you're just like, oh, these video packages are exhausting. I could use some hot wrestling action. Well, thank God, because we've got Bryan Adams and Horace Hogan with Stevie Ray versus your favorite tag team on the earth, Disorderly Conduct.
Okay, so I'm going to read out verbatim what my notes are for this match.
Okay.
So, Disorderly Conduct make their entrance first.
Mm-hmm.
The NWO come out.
Mm-hmm.
And my first note is, fuck this, I'm going to bed. So I did.
Do you know what my first note was? This is my own circle of hell.
So I said, fuck this, I'm going to bed. Now, 2 days later, I'm back. And I want to turn it off again.
Mm-hmm.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
This was the toughest. I gutted it out to the end of the next match before I took a break between nights, because I knew, kind of like what happened to you, is like, if I stop during this match and then tomorrow night I have to start back with this match, it's going
to
be very
difficult.
I didn't
get to the match, I got to the entrance. at some point I just, all caps, this fucking sucks. I hate this.
Yeah.
Bryan Adams should join Disorderly Conduct. Spike pile driver.
But what, is it, what would he be? What would his alliterative name be?
Ooh.
Beefy Brian.
I was gonna say Brutal Brian, but
Brutal Brian. He is fucking
that,
brutal.
That's what I was thinking.
That. Yeah.
Bocce.
Not in a fucking heavy metal sort of way.
Bocce Brian.
Bocce Brian. Bollocks Brian.
Anything that goes with Adams.
Or to be like in reference to like how fucking dull and boring he is, he'd be just Brian. His tough Tom, mean Mike,
Brian,
and Brian.
Brian upside down exclamation.
Yeah. Yeah, Brian. I'll read anything you put on the teleprompter. Here's the thing for you that I had a question about this match. And I know in just asking this question, I have automatically thought deeper about it than anyone.
I think I know what your question is going to be.
The match. Are the B team faces?
I knew that was going to be your question. Well, yes, they are stars.
Yeah.
Stars.
Because like I was never under any illusion. Like I didn't really think Disorderly Conduct were necessarily faces because they're fucking jobbers.
Mike doesn't work face.
They are too low on the pecking order to have a distinction between heel and face. But like, the NWO and the NWO B team are still heels. But in this one match that went on entirely too long, I think they're supposed to be baby faces.
Yeah, they're
right?
Stars, and stars don't lose. So you have to support the stars.
I guess. Horace started out this match as fiery as Horace Hogan can. Which by that I mean he just took a stroll around the ring.
He has a bomb on his singlet now.
He sure did. Well, he's the H bomb. So, what more would you expect? Because writing H bomb,
wasn't
H bomb written on them. People probably couldn't understand that. I mean, he certainly couldn't. So they put a H bomb on it for him.
I'd say he's about as lethal as one of those bombs in a. What's that, Minesweeper?
Minesweeper, yeah. Jesus, there's a throwback. I will say, as slow as he was walking around the ring, he was the fucking roadrunner compared to when Bryan Adams got in.
Mm-hmm.
Bryan Adams didn't fancy working tonight. not that
every night since 1992.
Yeah, I was gonna say he's in for like 45 seconds, the culmination of which is him hitting a gut buster, and I immediately looked at his face and I was like, this cunt's blown up. Like, he is sucking air after less than a minute in the ring.
They could be levels above sea level, Dave. You don't know. Could be hard to breathe in that arena.
Yeah, they could be up in Denver or something like that, not actually Penn State. Hey, the funniest line on this whole show happens during this match. Did you catch it?
No.
We got an update on a match that I absolutely, without hesitation, would love to see. They let us know what's happening in the life of David Flair at the moment.
Oh, I did.
So Ric Flair is out of the asylum now and he is looking for vengeance. And obviously the two people that put him in the funny farm that colluded together were Roddy Piper and his son David
Flair.
Excuse me,
that's Roderick Piper.
Roderick Piper, Esquire, and David Flair. Gormless idiot David Flair.
I was thinking, how has he got to extend David?
Yeah, I know. So today let us know that on Monday, Ric Flair decided...
In Charlotte.
And by the way, I know this is storyline punishment, but it's also legit punishment. It's like, maybe he actually was heated at David for something. Because he decided, in his infinite wisdom, that he was going to have his actual shoot son wrestle shoot maniac Meng.
You should have just left that at shoot Meng.
Shoot, yeah. Shoot Meng. Yeah.
That's his new name.
Yeah. The hit man and the shoot man.
Oh, brilliant.
I wanted to become a Nitro podcast in that moment to see that match and not have to watch this match. I started asking myself questions aloud watching this match, like, the first and foremost being, who the hell wants to see this match?
I'd say there's somebody.
Okay, that isn't related to any of these men.
I can think of one person.
I know exactly who you're going to say.
Who?
Is it Aaron?
Aaron is going to see this rundown for the show and go, hell yeah, disorderly conduct on the B show.
Yeah, yeah, she's absolutely going to do that. She's going to have to be, like, maybe these matches are going to get so bad that we'd have to draft her in as a correspondent if we literally physically can't put ourselves through them anymore.
We don't want to do this anymore. Just fill in for, like, 6 months.
Yeah. I don't think we could ever subject any of our listeners to the fucking trough that is 99 Thunder in some points. Jesus Christ. I also then asked, it was interesting because the next question I asked myself is, what is the purpose of this match? Which got me on to thinking about what has been one of the capital D discourse things on Twitter this week, on wrestling Twitter. Okay. Have you followed this discussion about kind of like the purpose of professional wrestling?
No, because Twitter is trash.
So there was a really like there was kind of, it was one of those things where there are kind of shite takes either side, and the truth, though no one taking up those stances will admit, is somewhere in the middle, where somebody had a thing about how if a match doesn't have, like, I'm paraphrasing heavily here, but the essential message was, if a match doesn't have writing and storyline and capital D drama behind it, then it serves no purpose.
Mm.
This was met with, as often, like, somebody comes in with this side of a hot take, the equal and opposing force is going to come in, and everybody says, well, like, the purpose of professional wrestling is as a simulated sport, not as a soap opera or anything like that. And this became the back and forth on Twitter a bit this week. And I found myself thinking about this argument during this, because this certainly serves neither purpose, because it doesn't It doesn't look remotely like an actual sporting contest, and it also serves no storyline basis whatsoever. So I started thinking a bit about this, and like, I don't know where you stand on it, and I would actually like to hear your thoughts on it, but like, I feel like there's an element of truth to both. There's an element to which people are overstating both as well, because I think I would lean more towards the, I'm not going to have the whole thing be like fucking crumbly dry, this is a sporting contest thing. But I would kind of like, in terms of how I would put matches together and how I would make wins and losses matter, I would see a lot of that philosophy in the way I would like my wrestling. Mm-hmm. But I do feel there needs to be recognition that even though that is definitely the roots of wrestling, and that is like the basics of wrestling as a simulated sport, I do feel what it is at its core has moved on, developed, evolved since then. And I don't think either are 100% necessary for, I think all genres of wrestling, when done well, this is something we said before when the intergender thing has come up or anything like that. I think when comedy wrestling or anything, when any genre, any philosophy of wrestling is done and structured well, it can be successful. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to get into the, because one of my bugbears is the whole people hand waving going, wrestling is a variety show and things like that. Like, I'm not that extreme about it, but I do think there's room for the sweet and the savory. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm very much of the same opinion as yourself, where I don't want just guys showing up in trunks and just wrestling, and wrestling is wrestling, and that's what it is. You need the best of both worlds. And it's very much the more straight-laced wrestling works opposite the more wacky, everything needs to have a reason to happen, storyline-driven stuff. You need both to have a fulfilling show.
Yeah.
And yes, you're going to have some elements of both in some stories. You're going to have some no elements of either, or, you know, one or the other in other stories. And that's mm-hmm. wrestling. That's what wrestling is.
Yeah.
It's not a either-or thing. It's, you have to have both, but you don't always have to have one or the other.
I think if you had to pick one to watch and stand alone by itself, I think the simulated sport mm-hmm. idea probably functions better as professional wrestling without the bells and whistles on it than the kind of overly arch-dramatic side. Can't really stand alone without good wrestling as a foundation mm-hmm. for very long. You can definitely belt, there's always going to be that portion of a wrestling audience, particularly the casual TV viewing audience, who are just, and we've both been to WWE house shows, and the amount of people in those crowds who are just entrances and finishers and anything in between that don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? And that's cool. They're there for the spectacle of it and things like that. But I think that is your, to go back to something I was talking about before the show, that is your high fructose, your junk mm-hmm. food. You can't be sustained by that alone.
No.
Whereas I think, like, as a watchable, logical project, maybe the simulated sport idea functions best. But like you said, it's kind of bringing both together on a show is the sweet spot, I think, particularly for American wrestling. Mm-hmm. Which we obviously talk about mostly on this show. It also makes me think of the whole, you know, MJF obviously being AEW champion at the moment, and we all know, like, his, in terms of his like promo ability and his ability to convey a story and things like that, he's like right up the top. And where he started kicking into the next level for me and being like, this is, no, as he would call himself, as like, this guy is a generational talent, like, is when all of a sudden he could actually also wrestle really fucking good. And I think there's a lot of folks who
are very slow to accept that.
I think, yeah, it's hard to shift first impressions, mm-hmm. and I totally respect that. But I think you watch that guy and you can't not, like, if you're trying to take your own personal biases or what your first impression of him was, either way, you can't look at that guy and not go, like, that's one of the most compelling figures in North American wrestling at the moment.
We've said this on the show, but, like, for me, the moment I got MJF was when he showed up in Ireland and just started ripping on the potato famine. Earnestly, yeah. Just ripping on us for the potato famine.
Yeah. And I think, like, if the Punk thing had reached his conclusion with him, and obviously Punk was on a hot year anyway before everything happened, I think we'd probably look at that as a contained piece as like the best angle that company's ever done.
Yeah.
All it was missing was the payoff. It was just fucking phenomenal. Like, I haven't got chills with a match in that company this year like I got with just the fucking
dog collar match.
The start of the dog collar match. You know,
I can honestly say that match has probably been on my home TV more than any other match because it's Connor's favorite match ever.
It's the easiest 5 stars I've given to a match in America, probably since that Almas Gargano match at TakeOver Philly. Yeah, fucking phenomenal. But that's by way of me just not talking about this tag team match for several minutes. Let's get back to it. Me and Mike is just getting wailed on boringly. I then started focusing on their gear. I think we talked before about how Disorderly Conduct just have like gear that's slightly too cheap for television. Yeah. Like, it's just very slightly ill-fitting, very slightly shoddily made, and rinky-dink. But I was then looking at Horace, and I was like, did you notice how, like, ridiculously high the cut on the legs of Horace?
Oh, it's very high, yeah.
Like, man is, like, one bad bump away from a whole bollock falling out.
He's, what was that character in Friends?
Oh, the guy with the gym shorts that was going out with Phoebe? Yeah, where he's just, constantly hanging.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is totally him.
A nice recent reference there.
Yeah. Of course, Captain Currency, Liam Malone. We get the only remotely interesting move in this match is the finish, double team spike pile driver. And I think, now maybe it was just the angle, I think Adams might have gone down on both arse cheeks for this one.
Ooh, I'm not sure. I think it might be in the angle.
Oh. Well, Erin can let us know in the tweets. She might do the, like,
are you not going to go back and rewatch
replay
it
for us? I'm absolutely not going to go back
and
rewatch
it. I really think you should.
But if she could freeze frame, if there's a moment where both cheeks are touching canvas, then we will finally have broken the curse.
Is this going to be like a VAR moment for the show?
No, I think it's one of those kind of like nature and agriculture things. Like, if you can see Bryan Adams with both arse cheeks on the canvas, we get 6 more weeks of summer kind of thing. So, like, you know, fingers crossed. I briefly, in the middle of this show, had such a wonderful time because Canyon is back. And I've missed Canyon. I'm so glad to see him. Now, he hasn't, in his time away, like, retooled or developed the character very much, but I'm just happy to see him back wrestling on my TV.
He had my shirt.
He's been off starring in a movie. And it just gave me flashbacks to the Jesse Ventura story. He says that he's been ever the cool guy. He says he's been living at large, but he's keeping it real here in the 1999. And then we get, this is my fist bump moment, Canyon versus Rey Mysterio Jr. It's a lovely little one, wasn't it?
It was fine. I know.
It was.
Yeah, I was disappointed.
It was, do you know what it was? It was, it's Christmas time. You've had your dinner. You've eaten all your vegetables.
Dominic Mysterio showed up at the door.
And your mom takes out the tin of sweets from under the tree. And she opens it. And you're hyped because you're getting sweets. But you know what she says to you? She says, just one. That's all she says.
You're going to say, you know what she says? They're quality street.
No, I'll still take a toffee penny. Love a toffee penny. I'm not, quality street are definitely the bottom rung of the Christmas sweet tins. But the toffee penny, and I can't remember the one that's like the,
you can't remember because nobody buys them.
No, yeah, it's even my grandparents who are usually, it's usually grandparents get quality street, and yeah, they don't get them anymore. They still go for the tins of biscuits, like the USA tin, which is still rocking, because there's a lot of like shortbread and yeah, things like that.
Quality. Cup of tea over Christmas, yeah. Couple of biscuits.
Absolutely. Is there, this is what, because we've got a lot of American listeners in here, and obviously big ups to our pals in Mauritius. As we recently learned, we're one of the highest rated wrestling podcasts in Mauritius at the moment.
And Sweden.
And Sweden. Yes. Yeah. Tell me, my non-Irish UK friends, do you have this tradition of a tin of individually wrapped sweets, or a tin of a selection of biscuits, or as my American friends would call them, different kinds of cookies?
Because they're wrong.
That you have around the tree, around the living room, at Christmas time, if guests should call over, or if you just fancied something while you're watching a bit of TV, because they are really a staple. They're a staple in two ways, Lee. And I know this of you without even ever having had this conversation with you. One, lovely tasty treat. And number two, absolutely in either your house or your parents' house, the tins from those tins of sweets and biscuits were absolutely used as storage for the Christmas lights and or baubles from the tree.
Yeah, yes, they have to.
Because like they were like an affordable metal tin once you were like, done with the sweets inside.
I could probably go out to my dad's shed and see tins from like the mid 90s still out there.
To my great shame, because I am such a, like, oh my God, the capitalists, they see me coming, Lee. About 2 or 3 years ago, rewind further, about 10 years ago, all the metal tins were gone and it was all plastic tubs, which just was not Christmas. It just didn't feel like Christmas. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago, in a very bringing back classic Coke formula sort of way, they brought back some of the tins, but you had to pay extra. Same amount of sweets, it's a little bit extra for the metal tin. And I got so excited as I turned to Emma, because it was 4 years ago that I saw them first, because it was our first Christmas living in the house together. And I said to her, amazing. Now we know what we can do with the Christmas lights.
You're such a fucking dad.
And it's up in, if you left your cushy recording studio there, Lee, you hopped in the car and you drove 45 minutes down to my house and you went up into my attic right now, you would see, I think, 4 Roses/Cadbury's celebrate or Cadbury's Miniature Heroes tins in which we had the baubles and the lights in until we put the tree up last
weekend.
You're unbelievable. I'm proud. And we also complete the set by having random Christmas things in the crisp boxes as well, the potato 20 pack variety selection boxes.
Oh, fucking hell. That
I am a man. I am a reliable man. I'm traditional.
That is good Irish tradition.
But your one sweet after dinner was this match, because I thought, though it wasn't like a notebook match or anything by any means, I thought Canyon was fantastic in this match. It showcased to me why Chris Canyon was such a great and underrated guy, because he's such a physically large man. Mm-hmm. That he's a great base for a cruiserweight guy like yep. Ray. However, he's got such a gas tank and such a wrestling IQ that he can absolutely keep pace with Ray. How many times on this show, Lee, have we even seen other cruiserweights lose track of how fast Ray is?
Yeah, we've said this before, that Ray can go at like 3/4 pace just so he can be sure that his opponent will stay with him.
Not only all that I've described, but the other thing about Chris Canyon that I absolutely love to bits and is so rare in the late 90s is that he has absolutely no ego about himself. Mm-hmm. He has no problem bumping around like a crazy person, making Ray look like $1 million.
Yeah, 100%.
That's what I loved about this match. I think what you say is true. That it is a fairly, you imagine this match in your head and it gets less than 10 minutes and, you know, it does what it says on the tin. It's fine. But in terms of like analyzing one of their performances, I think I looked at Canyon and I was just incredibly impressed, as I often am by the man. I did really like, they came back from the break and Tanay felt it was really important to stress that this match featuring Ray and Canyon, who is conservatively twice the size of the man, is not for the Cruiserweight title.
Well, I mean, Disco Inferno had been Cruiserweight champion not that long ago, so.
This is true. But, like, Canyon is enormous. Oh, he's huge. Like, deceptively enormous. Did you notice the bizarre injury in this match and how it happened?
No.
So they're on the outside, and Canyon goes to whip Ray into the railing. But Ray reverses the whip, and Canyon goes into the railing. And it's Granny takes the back into the railing. He does the kind of like straightens his back out, sells it, and he goes to flop down onto the floor. But as he does it, he flops forward too far. Penzer is sitting on his kind of metal hotel chair beside the ring, and Canyon catches his face on it and breaks his nose.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Yeah, because he rolls back and you can see a couple of drops of blood, and you see him like hold his nose and set it, or check it at least. And then for the rest of the match, he throws his hair in front of his face.
Okay, I didn't even notice.
So go back and watch it. I think it was like, because he's the heel, he doesn't want to draw attention to the injury and get sympathy. So again, incredibly selflessly, where he could have gotten people, you know, on his side rallying behind him because he's obviously, you know, like blood is pumping out of him. He just kind of sticks it out. And like, it is a testament to the man again, I think, Lee, that you didn't even notice. Because he doesn't lose a step. He doesn't lose a step. It is like, you don't see the moment of impact, but you see like his face go down. You can see exactly where on the chair it must have hit him, and you can see him flinch back as soon as he hits it. Definitely, like, that's where it happens. Canyon gets the heat. He misses a frog splash, rolls into the corner. Ray hits a Bronco Buster. Leg drop. Oh my God. So Canyon is then kind of like dangling off the middle rope. And Ray comes off with the guillotine leg drop. And Canyon is kind of turning around to face upward as he's doing it. And Ray just caught him on the face again. And I was just like, I shrieked. I was like, this poor fucking guy.
I actually thought it looked well in that Canyon wasn't naturally just kind of lying there. Yeah. It was more he was like trying to get out.
In the context of the match, it looked great. But knowing what had just happened to his face, I was like, that had to suck. So then Ray goes to do his like springing off the middle rope and land on the guy's shoulders and do the Hurricane Rana. But Canyon catches him. Bases and hits a sit out face buster, which looked really cool from the electric chair position. Sunset flip from Ray. Canyon hits a sit out dominator for two. Ray starts firing up, and this is like, I hated this finish.
Okay.
Well, I'm not hating. I was just going to say,
I actually thought the finish was pretty good.
I kind of get why they're doing it, but like, I kind of. Just do the finish or just do the post-match. I don't think you need to do both. I think it's overkill, to be honest. I think
Malenko and Benoit being in the ring was too much. If he had to just cut them off at the apron, that was fine.
So Ray fires up and Benoit and Malenko come out. He fights them off and then rolls up Canyon and wins. But the horsemen then immediately jump him, put his leg between the steps and the post and dropkick it. Today is hastily pointing out that Kidman is not there. He's at a signing. So Ray is taken out ahead of their match at the pay-per-view. So now you have, for the record, you have Saturn and you have Ray.
Both injured.
Are fucked up. Going into this. But yeah, no, I thought that, having them go into the ring, I think, was a little bit too much. I think if you had shown them on TV sneaking down to the ring so that the crowd are kind of, you know, they know they're there and that we at home know they're there and they're kind of like stalking until the finish. But I think like the them trying to cost him and failing to, even though it's 2-on-1, kind of made them look a little bit dumb.
It was trying to get the best of both worlds where Ray didn't lose and they still got the heat on the horseman.
Either come in and beat him down and ring the bell for disqualification, which I rarely advocate, or just do the post-match part. Don't have the bit where they try to cost him the match and fail to.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And it also kind of makes like Canyon look like a dunderhead, because like even he and two of the horsemen can't fucking outsmart this little pipsqueak, you know. But like, again, maybe that's just me overthinking things. We then get our main event, inexplicable as it may be. Chris Benoit versus and Dean Malenko versus the Texas Hangman of Texas Hangman 1 and Texas Hangman number 2. Now, Lee, I will ask you, one, did you know who this was? And two, if not, how long did it take you to figure out who it was?
One, no. And two, when Tanae said the Texas Hangman.
Well, but do you know who they really are?
No, and I was going to look it up, but then I just wasn't arsed.
Okay. So.
Hang on.
They come out for the match.
Is one of them Jack Victory?
Nope. No, that would have been a good bit. But I cottoned onto this, and I was going to make it a joke on the show, right? I was setting up for, oh, this is going to be a good callback to something I was going to say, that I did say for an earlier match, right? They came out to the ring, and it's about 10 seconds into the match, and I had started writing the joke that, oh my God, this gear is so shitty, they must go to the same tailor as Disorderly Conduct. And then I was like, those guys are relatively similar in stature to Disorderly Conduct. I wonder. And then I Googled.
And it is.
And you know what, Lee? It absolutely is both of them.
I love that. Double jobbing. Quite literally double jobbing.
We were hoodwinked into watching Disorderly Conduct twice. And One Thunder, and like you said, they handily lost both matches.
And both went way too long.
Yeah, both went way too long. Neither had any sense of peril whatsoever, because like, why, oh my God, why in pluperfect health would you debut a mystery jobber-ass looking tag team in a main event against these two guys and expect anyone to give a shit? This is the kind of tune-up match you put in the opener or second from the top.
I am begging, genuinely begging anyone that listens to this, that subscribes or listens to fucking Conrad's show with Kevin Nash, if they're doing a Q&A, I want someone to ask Kevin Nash memories of Disorderly Conduct. Because that man loved him some Disorderly Conduct.
Yeah. Fucking hell, I can't believe we had to see him twice. I'm still so mad. I looked at the card and I was just like, I looked at the time left and I was like, oh, there must be another match. And then I looked at the card on Cage Match and I was like, this is the main event. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? This is the main event of your go home Thunder.
It technically wasn't the main event.
Yeah, all right. We'll fucking get to that. It was the main event as far as anyone in this building in Penn State was concerned.
I think those people went home happy, Dave.
Why? Yes, exactly. And they unlocked the doors.
They were allowed to leave.
It is at this point that I think, because people were still in the crowd during this match, that it must
a
have been
situation.
A hostage-type situation, yes. I can see no other logical reason why they stayed there. Their gear is
it's so baggy, at least a size too big.
And you don't want that from spandex. It looks like dog shit.
I mean, they have the Rocks logo plastered all over them.
And this is just as well, 98% of this match is just Benoit, mostly Benoit, but also Malenko just beating on these guys.
And they don't put them away.
Yeah, they don't, but yeah, and once it goes past 90 seconds, they look like idiots. And there is a stretch of the match where they do get a little bit of heat. I kind of referenced it earlier in the show, where they start working the leg on one of the fucking hangmen. And they're like, Malenko in particular is shouting down the camera, like, this is a message to Ray, who they've just done his leg in. And the first time he does that gets a little bit of a reaction from the crowd. But that's about it. Because again, like we said with the opener, there's no sense of peril. There's no sense of, oh, they might lose to these fucking appearing soon at your local armory ass tag team guys we've never seen before. Fuck me. It was bad. Like, there's nothing. I have nothing written down. Aside from what I already said, there's nothing I have except for Benoit hits three Germans and blows his nostrils clean on one of them. And then one of them taps out with a cloverleaf.
The Texas Hangman tap out to the Texas cloverleaf.
Yeah.
Clever.
Which, yeah, one, the Texas thing is funny, but also, like, the cloverleaf is always something that I interpret as being more arduous to the back than the legs. I know the legs are pretzeled somewhat, but, like, not as much as, say, a sharpshooter. Yeah, it's just a fucking bizarre. And that's the end of, like, the in-studio part. But then we get... Do you want to talk to people about what the actual main event of this show was, as far as the television audience was concerned?
Well, it's not this part of the show that I actually enjoyed. It's the part after this. But yeah, we get a Nitro recap where Ric Flair booked...
A main event is the recap.
Ric Flair booked himself on Nitro in Charlotte to face DDP.
Yeah.
And for the title. And we go from that to Randy Savage and his crew appearing in ring. So you have Savage, Miss Madness... Medusa and Gorgeous George.
Yeah.
Security come out. Flair is insisting that Savage is fired or doesn't have a job or something, and security come out. It's at this point that Ric Flair begins to accost Gorgeous George, and the scene gets very uncomfortable.
Yes, especially in light of certain Plane Ride from Hell documentaries.
And... it all breaks down, and Gorgeous George ends up decking Charles Robinson, but it's all just a setup to get Asia over as this massive woman. And
who is still being referred to as like the head nurse or something, or that woman.
Because she's still in her scrubs, because of course.
Yeah.
But I think... at one point, Gorgeous George has a wardrobe malfunction because Gene very quickly takes off his suit jacket and can be seen in the background telling security to make sure to cover her breasts.
Yeah. So when she gets physical, you can see her, because she's essentially just wearing a bra, and you can see she is either she's had the malfunction or she's preventing. Worried that it is about to be the case. And there's one point, very distressingly, in the middle of that where Flair appears to fairly deliberately reach out and grasp her chest.
I actually think that was in the main event match itself. When she gets involved.
That's what it is. Because she has another afraid she's
then,
going
then
to...
we get a cut to the actual main event of DDP versus Flair. Which ends with Savage coming out with Gorgeous George. And while Savage distracts the referee... while Gorgeous George gets
George,
into the ring...
George distracts Robinson.
And distracts Robinson. It's at this point that Ric Flair very obviously makes a grab for her. And...
yeah. Which is like... Do you know what? As well as the grossness of the Flair part, like, I think... the logic of the story they've been telling breaks in as much as, like, the whole thing is that Charles Robinson is actually all talk and he's a coward.
And then he runs her off.
Yeah, he chases her, whereas the whole thing has been, like, she's trying to chase him so far. So I didn't like that. I didn't like this whole thing, but I especially didn't like that.
Savage slides the nooks into DDP. DDP knocks out Flair. And another referee runs in and counts him out, and that's the end of the main event on Nitro.
Because, of course, like, Flair's not jobbing clean to the world champion.
No. And that was the end of your main event on both Nitro and Thunder. And then we get what I thought was the real main event. For the first time ever, go-home show ended. With a full production rundown video of every match on the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
unbelievable.
Yeah, and this might help.
I nearly cried.
How many, like, we've been doing this for
way too long.
But yeah, way too long. We're about to go into our fourth year. I think. I don't think it's fifth year yet. It's hard to fucking keep track. Was it 2019 we started this? Wait.
I don't know. Is that right?
It's not like we could. Actually, I can check because I can see when our Twitter started. But suffice to say, since we started the show, I think this is the first time we've had a pay-per-view that, oh God, 2018.
Well, it was Christmas 2018. So we have been doing it.
Yeah, we're about to hit our four-year anniversary. That's, yeah. So we're about to go into our fifth year of doing the podcast, which is incredible. But in that time, this is the first pay-per-view that has had a go-home show end with a video package for the pay-per-view that actually, sometimes you'll get like just the TV commercial for a pay-per-view. But this is the first one that felt like it actually gave you a sense of what was on the card and why you should care.
Unless they change it between now and Sunday.
Yes, quite possibly. Right. Slamboree 99. I am going to get this up on Wikipedia. For those of you who are more recent listeners to the program, after the go-home show, for every pay-per-view, because the loose premise this show was based on was how much sense can we make of WCW just watching Thunder, I like to ask Lee to tell me the entire card for a pay-per-view just based off watching. And Lee, you will be honest with the listeners, you have never done a cheat sheet. If you know, recap all his scores month by month, you can tell he's not doing a cheat sheet. And that's not Lee's fault for not paying attention. That is all on World Championship Wrestling.
Listen, we watch these shows. It's not like we skip anything.
I want to ask you a question, Lee. I'm not sure if I've asked you this one before. How many matches do you think are on this?
Oh, you've asked me this before.
Oh, have I? Cool.
I don't know. 9.
There are exactly 9 plus 1 dark match. Okay. Do you... I don't think you'll get the dark match, so would you like to know what the dark match
does it involve
was?
Norman Smiley?
It does not. But I would like to say that this dark match was so memorable that Wikipedia lists the time for this match as NA.
Okay.
The dark match had Dale Torborg versus Johnny Swinger.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. I bet you're raging that didn't
make sense. That's a 2022 Impact match.
Isn't it, though?
You'll have to actually ask Garrett, did that match happen in Impact in 2022?
Did that match happen this year? Yeah, because then we could stitch it back together with the rest of this pay-per-view and show it complete for the first time. Okay, you have got 9 matches, my friend. Would you like me to tell you, I can give you an easy ride this month, and I can tell you how many titles were on the line on this show.
No, or you can I'll go for it.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll start with the title matches. We've got DDP versus Kevin Nash for the world title. We've got Scott Steiner versus Buff Bagwell for the US title. We've got Rick Steiner versus Booker T for the TV title.
3.
We have the triple threat tag team title match of Raven, Saturn, the Horsemen, and the Cruisers.
Yep, that is 4. And you have now also completed all title matches on this program.
Then we have the de facto hardcore title match of Bam Bam versus Brian Knobs.
5.
Now we have Ric Flair versus Roddy Piper.
6.
Sting versus Goldberg.
7.
Stevie Ray versus Conan.
Yeah. That's 8.
And match number 9. They definitely mentioned this on the show.
Yes.
Let me think.
People are screaming.
I know they are.
Devices.
I think I hit all. Oh, Charles Robinson and Curtis Short. Yeah.
That's it. Clean sweep, my friend.
I think that's the second or third month in a row I've done this.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say either WCW are getting better, but I'm not even going to entertain that either or because that's not true. Maybe you're just getting better at the job, eh?
Nah, that couldn't be that.
Couldn't be that. That's too far-fetched altogether, isn't it?
Talk to my employers. I don't get better or anything.
Right. Thank you all very much for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. We shall return in... Ooh, we won't be returning in 2 weeks with Slamboree, will we? What day is this coming out? We will. I'm trying to see if our Christmas break factors in. We'll be back for Slamboree before Christmas. Before the end of the year.
And don't forget, after Slamboree, there will be a 2 week gap to the next Thunder.
Yes, we've got preemption. And if anybody has listened to our shows where Thunder has previously been preempted,
we have fucking no clue what's going to be happening.
They're some of my favorite shows because it's just like, I fucking guess this is happening now.
Every title will have changed hands between the pay-per-view and when we next get to a show.
And based on the world title lately, maybe more than once.
Randomly fucking Ricky Steamboat was world champion or something when we come back.
Fucking hell. And you know what the thing is? They may have changed and never be referenced. We may never know that the title's changed. They may be back on the original title holder. Oh, it's good stuff. Anyway, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. Keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us. You can follow us on Twitter at WCWThunderPod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks.
My name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Nos vemos por ahí.